support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Cambria, California. Come along and join us for a fascinating visit with Susan Foreman, the owner of Once Upon a Time. That's with a T-Y-M-E, but it's a place where time never stands still. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Tom.
You've been in the time clock watch business for 50 years.
I have been, like Mother Time as opposed to Father Time.
Yeah. And you have a retail shop at the north end of Newtown in Cambria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I opened this 30 years ago.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of getting the hang of it.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
So you have a little bit of everything here.
Mm-hmm.
You have modern, state-of-the-art watches, and you have ancient, historic mechanical clocks. It's really cool.
Yeah, we actually do. And we repair, of course, all types of watches and clocks. But here at the shop, I have like my old tower clock movements. One of them I found in Lyon, France, and we had that shipped over here. That was in 1970. And I have another tower clock movement that was made by the maker that made the Fresnel lens off of Piedras Blancas.
Wow.
So he made lenses and he made tower clock movements.
And he was in Paris?
And he was in Paris. Yep. So to have two items from, you know, mid-19th century Paris, made by the same maker, and now we're like a couple of blocks apart. So it's quite amazing. People come in here like it's their own little museum.
Yeah, and it is, a museum.
We do, really. We're in a different century here.
And again, back in time with timekeeping and clocks and watches, we're both just in awe of these people who were master mechanics and could do such fine craftsmanship.
Well, and you think about it, when they were doing this back in the, 16th, 17th century, think of the lighting that they did not have. Think of all the electronics that we have now. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, everything was done by hand.
Yeah.
And they really have not improved on a mechanical timepiece. What they were doing, I have some clocks here from the 1700s, a couple of the floor clocks here. And virtually the movements are the same as they are today for a mechanical.
Wow.
You know, it's quite remarkable.
And I bet you're just so in awe of these little geniuses that figured out a way to make such incredible mechanical equipment.
It is. It's really amazing. I just got back from a seminar back in Philadelphia, and the theme was revolutionary timekeeping. So it was timekeeping during the American Revolution. And it's interesting, even Benjamin Franklin developed a clock.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was very interested in time.
Wow.
And he came up with this crazy, it's a three-wheeled clock, which is totally, well, anyway, I don't, but at least it showed he was interested in, in clocks.
Back in the day, in the revolutionary era, weren't there town criers that would walk around announcing the time?
Actually, they had a lot of public clocks.
Uh-huh, okay.
So you had the tower clocks and all. But a lot of the clockmakers at that time were really quite revered. Rittenhouse in Philadelphia is like, oh my God, the patron saint of clockmakers in Philadelphia.
Wow.
And so it is interesting to look at how important clocks and watches were to an economy. Yeah, England was, of course, all the rage back in the 18th century.
And then because many people in the neighborhood couldn't see the tower clock, you had the bells.
And did you know that there's different, a church, say, that was going to put in a tower clock could buy bells you could hear in a certain distance?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I learned that when I was up in a tower clock in Rhode Island.
Uh-huh.
And that particular church bought a bell back in the mid-19th century that could be heard for up to 2 miles.
Wow.
And so it was one of the bigger bells. Whereas if you just wanted it within, the city blocks, mm-hmm. you could get a smaller bell. And I thought, that's what an interesting concept. I did not know.
And so today, there's still that residual announcing of time via church bells and mm-hmm. tower bells today.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of reminds you, it's noon. Or
that's right.
Yeah. That's really cool. You alluded to some of the master watchmakers and clockmakers in revolutionary era and post. And a few of those names are still around today, aren't they?
They are. You know, the interesting thing, too, is to show you how important, you know, watches and clocks were. Ford, Henry Ford, was very interested in watches and clocks, and particularly Waltham watches. And he, at the age of 14, took apart a watch, and he wanted to become a watchmaker, in essence. And eventually, though, when he started doing with the cars, he based the assembly line on how watches and clocks were being made here in the United States. So the watch and clock industry had quite an impact on other industries. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first to be automated.
That's really interesting.
So it is. It's got a lot of history to time.
Yeah. And a clock that I know you're enamored with is the railroad watch.
Oh, yeah, I love railroad watches.
Tell us why.
Well, I just think that, really, of all the watches that have been made, they are the most reliable. They had to meet certain specifications. They had to be 17 jewel. They had to have what they call lever set so the watch would not get accidentally reset in the pocket. And they had to be tested every year to make sure for accuracy. And they're just finely made. They're just so reliable. Mm-hmm. I'm quite proud of the American Railroad watch.
So the traditional wristwatch or the pocket watch is kind of an oddity today, right? It's gone high tech for most people.
Well, thankfully, most of the people that come in here like the old analog still. So.
Okay. So what are they looking for? What are they in pursuit of?
Well, of course, mostly they come in to have some family heirloom repaired, whether it's a railroad watch or an old clock or what have you, because that is our main thing, is repair.
We're downstairs in your more retail showroom space where you have old watches, new watches, new clocks, old clocks. But upstairs is the laboratory
that
where the
is.
Mad scientists
People love
work.
The upstairs.
Yeah. So you have a full-time repair person?
I do, and Philip's been with us for 26 years. My late husband actually apprenticed him. And my husband and I, prior to opening this shop, we had a large repair shop in Los Angeles. And we had 50 employees at that shop.
Wow.
And we were doing around 200, 250 watches a day. And we primarily, at that time, we also did clocks. But we were doing work for all the major watch companies under warranty. We did work for jewelry stores. We did a lot of work for the U.S. Navy and for dive shops because that was one of our areas of expertise.
Wow. Are you still doing some of that here?
Well, we don't do that. Uh-huh. We do repairs of all those items.
Right. Do you do warranty repair?
We do not do warranty repair. No, we just are a small town mom and pop type shop now.
What's the competition on the Central Coast, say, between Ventura and Monterey? Is there anybody else that does what you do?
No, there's very, very few. Some work out of their houses, you'll find, you know, some what I almost call hobbyist in a sense. But as far as having a storefront, that's why we're getting so many people from Bakersfield, Fresno. We have a lot coming up from L.A.
So you're it between L.A. and San Francisco,
right? Well, yeah, there's just not many left, you know. It's definitely a dying trade.
And that's because the traditional timekeeping is an anachronism to a point, right? So it becomes those who adore history and historic artifacts.
Well, you know, it's very much like I was talking to someone that, you know, about auto mechanics. And there again, that's another area where people are not learning trades. And who's going to take care of, you know, our cars if we still have an old gas-powered car? So it's kind of the same thing as the trades are not emphasized in the college degrees.
So talk to us for a moment about some of the coolest historic pieces that you have. I mean, that one up front with a giant school bell attached to
it. Oh, yeah,
that's incredible.
That is quite a neat piece. That was one that my husband and I found in Lyon, France. At that time, back in the late 60s, 1970, they were removing all the mechanical tower clocks and putting in electric. So this was actually out in the field.
Wow.
And it was rusty.
Did it come out of?
It was actually a bridge that was the entrance to Lyon, France. There was a tower clock in this bridge, that, you know. And so anyway, it was out in this field. It was totally rusty. And we decided, hey, it was cheap. It was rusted. We could restore it when we got it home. So we asked a friend of ours from Geneva, who was an artist, to ship it home. And we put it on the slow boat from Switzerland, you know. he sent it air freight.
Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden, you know, even back in 1970, that was quite expensive.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, our bargain-priced clock was escalated.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
But it is a neat. It is a neat piece.
It really is. Uh-huh. Probably wise by the front window.
Exactly. Yeah. I had it running at our shop in L.A. and brought it up here, and it's been running ever since. And we did just finish doing a clock repair for C's Candy. Well, this is belonged to Mary C,
uh-huh.
and it's her grandson has it now. And he lives in Camarillo. And this clock is from 1792.
Wow.
And it has a wooden movement because the American clocks of that era often used wooden movements. And I had it standing right next to my desk for, you know, about a month or so while we repaired it. But we've had been associated with that clock. My late husband repaired it in the 50s.
Wow.
So from all those times, we mm-hmm. still have a hand in that clock.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a neat clock.
You have no fear if somebody walked in, whatever they bring you, you could probably fix it, right?
Or in a lot of cases. There's going to be a few things that, no.
Some curveballs.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But
but an old antique mantle clock you could fix.
Oh, absolutely.
And, uh-huh. mm-hmm. and you have some new items here too, right?
I do. Favorite are my Citizen watches, the EcoDrive.
Really?
Love them. They're powered by light. They're fabulous. I've been associated with Citizen for nearly 50 years.
Wow. And to what do you attribute?
We were the service center for them, so I knew their service record, and I've been to their factory in Japan. And my husband actually designed a couple of early watches for them. And so he was the advisor to the president in the U.S. here. So I have a real good rapport, but their quality is really exceptional, and their prices are reasonable, and they're just... They're so user-friendly. You don't have to wind them up. You don't have to move like in an automatic watch, say a Rolex or whatever. You just wear it. Mm-hmm. It's just so easy.
But an Apple Watch, that's like a different...
Oh, God, that's another world.
Yeah, that's alien territory.
Oh, yeah. Anything like, oh, God, no, something else to plug in.
Okay, well, anything you want to add...
I can't think of anything, but if anyone's up here Monday through Friday, 8 to 3:59, as we say, because we close at 4, and mm-hmm. our nice pill wears off at 4.
And you're at 555 Main Street.
Right.
Right off of Highway 1.
Right. And we're happy to entertain.
I love it. And then afterwards, you can walk to the beach.
That's exactly why we close at 4 o'clock and why I'm closed on the weekend.
Susan Foreman, thank you so much. The owner of Once Upon a Time in Cambria, California.
Well, thank you, Tom.
You're very welcome. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Cambria, California. We'll see you up here.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives. and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. And in fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.